Blog Talk Radio.
Jersey, I got you.
This shit fire for real.
Hey, yo, bro, pass me that light over there, man.
Just a little vibe, man. Right,
wait,
hey.
Yeah. All the hurt and the shame, my pops told me to stay strong, remain in the game. Yeah. Never hold your head down when the next man's near. And if I never learn nothing, I remember never to fear. From a kid to a grown man, that's my nigga, that's my man. 100 grand through the thick and thin. And I'ma hold this shit down to the very end. You put the lyrics to this paper like the perfect pen. I know the foundation's shit, but it can never break. Living off forgiveness, fuck them niggas cause they can't relate. I know I trouble my family based off the past mistakes, but I'ma continue striving cause I'm trying to be great. What's done is done, what's wrong is wrong, but I'ma make it right. I know my time away was long, but I remain to fight. They say you too young to remember you a kid, Cuddy. Praying for my pops every day and night, yeah.
Yeah, listen to me, man. Hey, yo, shorty in the background, man. This shit. Make this shit a vibe. Woo!
Let me talk that struggle to him. Let's go. I remember second covers to the sky. Now I got a king size and I'm living life. I remember how the tears in my eyes. Had to struggle for a meal every night. I remember looking mama in the eye. We was crying together, but now we grinding head high. And I remember time after time telling my peers be strong, cause we gotta make it by. Down bad, I ain't have a thing. I had to get rid of the most prize just to come up on some top change. Remember seeing your homie drop, they hit him close range. Bloodshot hit his eyes, watching bullets hit the main vein. Constant desperation, these niggas doing the same thing. Pointless affiliations, niggas trying to gang bang. Turn my noodles to pasta, tired of fucking with no name. Sad to see my people down, forgotten like a no name. Mind on my money, trying to make a way. I'm just trying to grind, haters in my face. Never wasting time, live another day. I'm just trying to grind for them better days. These niggas hating and watching, they steady plotting me. Hit him in his body, his head's up like a pedigree. You know, I'm getting high off that purple, I'm in love with the earth. I'm entertaining the drama, so nigga, fuck what you heard.
Nigga, fuck what you heard.
I'm entertaining the drama, so nigga, fuck what you heard. Fuck what you heard. Let's go.
Yellow beat, holla at me.
I'm talking, go to sleep paid and wake up flossing. Keep a shooter close, make you fly like a Martian. Keep green in my clothes like I play for ball.
Cups in the air, nigga, this is for the bosses.
The bosses.
Undisputed overhead, homie. in the air, nigga, this is for the bosses. Undisputed over here, homie, we ain't got no losses. Haters can't be me, not even on they BD. Pockets like this dead can of life when you see me. And I roll with niggas self-made like a GG. And my phone's my remote for the TV. I'm from P-H-I-L-L-Y, serious. Place you catch a headshot, left like a period. Or you can flip bricks into a stack like a pyramid. Or you can go to school, get your learning experience. First, create your brand and then create the cost. And then, market yourself, now you some motherfucking boss. Now you cruising in the color, selling shots, no bluffing. Ride with a bad bitch, ass off like a muck. Cups in the air, nigga, this is for the bosses. Undisputed over here, homie, we ain't got no losses. Cups in the air, homie, this is for the bosses. Undisputed over here, homie, we ain't got no losses. Cups in the air, nigga, this is for the bosses. Undisputed over here, homie, we ain't got no losses.
No running with some mass. So I go, ooh, way too fast. I don't need you, I'm way too much. Ain't no shorty over the cash. And my mind don't play with hoes. I just want diamonds, what's the cost? And that frost in my body go drip. Keep my grip on the side of my hip. Most of these niggas wanna play the bids. $100 million roll. I think for that they sold they soul. Even the gangster, y'all not low. I seen the worst in y'all. Used to beat the follower. Now my face is off the mud. I got the cash for now, y'all won. But now we'll not let it stop. Keep my circle close and small. It's the new day, she fucking. Popping the pills, I down like king. I will not lie, lost the fly. Keep it a buck, that's why I'm alive. And for the best, she take the shot. If she's watching, she alone. Hey, you, no more space on top of my plate. Hard as it gets, that's risk I take. Gotta go bathe the newest wave. I don't need you, I don't got time, I won't relay. They was so pussy to run that fade. I do this damage to AOA. And I stop my chasing passion. I'ma go do it, things are lacking. I'ma get my soul inside the fashion. Even if that shit taking me whole, let it go low, ride that slow. Tell you when to go and suck my toes. I'm in the post, I'm really gon' kneel. Face my heart and tongue to steal. Let me go do this shit quick. Not many people can face my shit. I don't know how many dollars it takes to chill. Feel my pain and never come near. Face to face, I reckon I spill. It's a new time, dumb collection. Giving my people a head of respect. And it's a new way, it's a new way. Reach you, watch that, don't tell time. That's the way, most of my day. I don't need you, no more plays. I don't need you. No more space on top of my plate. Hard as it gets, that's risk I take. Gotta go bathe the newest wave. I don't need you. I don't got time, I won't relay. They was so pussy to run that fade. I do the damage to 808.
Check, I beat it up, pronto. Ain't no thing to jump a number on you like a domino. If you keep my stomach fair, I keep you fresh, head to toe. Call me for protection if you need me by your front door. Drama come your way, I have it looking like. I wanna ride with you, spend my whole night with you. I wanna provide for you, live my whole life with you. Girl, I wanna ride with you, spend my whole night. I wanna provide for you, live my whole life with you. Girl, I wanna ride with you, yeah, 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 yeah. Ooh, yeah, 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 yeah. Ooh. Now let me bring your dreams to life. Taking trips out to Jamaica with her feet up in the sand. Taking pictures with the paper, be my queen, I be your king. Chess move, all them haters up together. Got a love that's stronger than a gladiator. Girl, I love that cute face, slim waist with your black skin. Long gold lock with that overseas accent. Love you educated and don't give it up to many men. Love it when you make that booty jiggle like a Mac 10. Competition goes, see them cut them like a split end. Now you got a Gucci bag, put your number Mercedes Benz. Fuck with a real one, I lead you to them dividends. Change your whole lifestyle, join the money team.
I wanna ride with you, spend my whole night with you. I wanna provide for you, live my whole life with you. Girl, I wanna ride with you, spend my whole night with you. I wanna provide for you,
What's good? What's good, everybody? What is going on? Tonight's a special episode. We have the mother of James Bill. It's a very difficult story. I don't have no understanding of how the system can just do this to a little baby and family that really cares about him. It's just really difficult. All these stories I've been reading, and don't mind my granddaughter, she wouldn't be a part of the show tonight, I guess. I just don't get it. How the system, how people can do any harm to a child. Just takes me off. But I'm definitely, we have his mother on the line. Been speaking to her for the last couple of days, and I really send my prayers to her, her family, little James, everybody that's in love. This really bothers me. It really gets to my, it really grinds my ears. And makes me angry that our system or these judges and these CPS workers don't really care. They go after, they don't go after. Ones that don't really do nothing and somebody just spitefully wants to tell some lies, they go after. So really jacked up. Caller 9459. Caller, state your name, where you calling from, and what it is you, where you live.
Hi, I'm Kara Witkowski. I'm the mother of James Riker Beal, and I am from Illinois.
How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm actually in Wisconsin right now, having a lovely vacation with my daughter.
Is she?
You know, she is doing well. It's definitely been a rough 2 years for both of us. You know, it's been just as hard on her as it has been for me and the rest of my family. But, you know, days like today where I see her smile and I see the light in her eyes are days that I cherish forever.
Okay. Well, this is a great honor to have you on my show. This is why I built the show, for things that society don't know about that need to be heard. And it's not here, just like all other children that are not here to speak for themselves. We have advocates as far as real parents that care about their kids. And want to do by their children. So I applaud you. I think it's great that you came on the show to tell James's story and tell your story. So you have the floor.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I'm very appreciative for the opportunity to tell our story, and I am very appreciative of people like you who are willing to give a place for advocates and mothers and victims like myself, as well as survivors, to tell their stories. So basically, this all starts in 2019, so we're going on 2 years. I was in a very toxic relationship. I had entered into a relationship when I was 17 years old with a 26-year-old man. Like most 17-year-olds, I was naive, and I was not aware of what I was really getting into. At that time, I was living with a friend, and that went south because she had a type of housing where she could not have a roommate live with her. It was like assisted living, basically. So anyways, we were seeing each other, not romantically, more as, you know, just kind of intimate, but not romantic. And so because we were seeing each other, his mother had a building, and his mother owned this building, and he resided in it along with another friend of ours, which was a mutual friend, and they invited me to come stay with them. Things got, you know, basically very romantic quickly between me and Thomas Beale, who's the father of my children, and he asked me to get into a relationship with him. The relationship was great at first. I basically felt like he had saved me. He had taken me out of a very toxic situation. He had given me a place to live, even though I was paying the rent and I was paying the bills, but I still felt very grateful, you know, being a 17-year-old with nowhere else to go. And a reason why I stayed with him as long as I did is probably because of that day where I felt as somebody gave me an opportunity, which I didn't think that I would have. So basically, it was like, it was very romantic. And I think that's so important to talk about because these predators, it's not like that at first. It's not like someone is horrible the very first thing. They're typically very charming, very charismatic, very manipulative. You know, you're completely falling under their spell because they're so good at what they do, and they have been practicing it for so long. So I was definitely head over heels. I was in love with him. I ended up getting pregnant at 19. So we had been seeing each other for about a year because I had just turned 18 2 months after, you know, we were seeing each other. And then when we became romantically involved, it was about a year. And then I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. It was a complete flip when I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. He started becoming very hostile towards me. He was very angry. He did not want to have a child. He told me to abort our child. He was not happy at all. I basically told him that I wanted to have our child because I was 19 and I wasn't making a lot of money. I was considering an open adoption to give her the best possible chance at life. He did not like that idea either, and he did not know that we were going to have a daughter. I told him that I couldn't, you know, decide the gender, but by what I was reading with cravings and everything else, I thought our child was going to be a boy. He became very excited when I thought our child was going to be a boy and everything changed. He said he wanted to raise our child with me. He was not getting work. I ended up taking up two jobs. I bought everything for the nursery myself. I paid all the medical bills myself. You know, I became very hardworking at 19, taking up two jobs just so we could have this child. I found out that we were having a girl. I let him know we were having a girl. And immediately it was, again, you need to abort this child. I don't want anything to do with this child. We cannot go through with this because of the gender change. And I was like, well, no, you know, you committed to this. This is what's going to happen. We are having this child, you know, whether you want to be involved in her life or not, that's on you. But I'm having this child and I will raise her myself if I have to. So he was even telling me at 9 months to abort her. Things became very abusive. He was telling me to kill myself, and he knew I had depression as well as PTSD, and he would tell me to kill myself while I was pregnant, which was very dangerous because my pregnancy with her was actually there was a special condition with her where the placenta was basically flattened out, and it was a high-risk pregnancy. So on top of the stress of that and working, he was telling me to kill myself every day, and it was getting very difficult. So I ended up staying with my parents a bit and telling him basically, you know, we're separated. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to make sure she's safe, and I'm going to have her and get my own apartment you know, and when she's born.
Right.
So anyways, I gave him the opportunity to come to the hospital. And he did not even want to come to the hospital to see his daughter when she was born. I was like, well, you know what? If you're not going to come to the hospital and see your daughter when she's born and hold her and be with her, then I am going to give her your last name. Because there was a whole issue with that. There was a whole fight where he didn't want her to have his last name. And I knew that he would regret not being with her at the hospital. So that was my condition with him. And he said, okay, I'll come to the hospital as long as you, he said, I'll come to the hospital as long as you give her your last name. So I gave her my last name. And that was why her name is Witkowski instead of Beale. So after I had her, his attitude changed. He was very connected to her, very close to her, wanted to be with her always, became like a very loving and doting father. He was completely ignoring me, didn't show any love towards me, affection towards me, and I was fine with that because she was happy. And so we were raising her together. I started pulling away from him, and as soon as I started pulling away from him, that's when he wanted to be close to me. So things ended up going well for a bit. I mean, there was still, you know, toxic things like psychologically and emotionally, but there was no physical abuse. There was no sexual abuse. There was no, you know, major concerns. And Sasha was happy. I was happy. So I thought, you know, that was going well. We ended up moving into the suburbs. We got out of the south side of Chicago into the suburbs. We were living with his father and his stepmother, who were a lot of help with Sasha because I was going through postpartum pretty bad while working.
Right.
I tried to bring Sasha to work with me. They would not allow it. So because my boss wouldn't allow me to go to work with her, she ended up being watched a lot by her step-grandmother and her grandfather, and she loved her step-grandmother, and I felt very comfortable with the step-grandmother. The grandfather, however, I found very controlling, and he always wanted things his way. He wanted her to eat what he wanted her to eat, even though it wasn't healthy for her. He was very obsessed with constantly giving her apple juice, which annoyed me, showering her with gifts all the time, toys, needing to have her in his presence like all the time. I mean, even though you're a grandfather, it was very weird because we had not had any relationship with Tom's father beforehand. It was literally I had Sasha and all of a sudden his father came into our lives. I had maybe met his father twice. And then All of a sudden, it was every single day. So it was very weird, especially considering Tom had told me his father was highly abusive, like sadistically abusive, broke his brother's collarbone, was highly abusive with Tom as well. And, I mean, there was broken bones, sprained bones. It was very concerning. So I told them basically that I didn't really feel comfortable with her around his father, and I mentioned this many times. And he didn't really care. And I have a medical condition where I don't drive. So because I wasn't driving, he would control that. So he would take her there whenever he chose. So I figured, okay, I'm not able to control this part, but I can control where we live. So I got us a place in Elk Grove Village. Before we went to Elk Grove Village, though, his dad had a condo in Palatine. So we went to go stay in Palatine, not with his father, but in a separate place. So when we were staying in the separate place, his father was still being extremely controlling, needing to come over every single day. Even though it was our place, he was coming in whenever he felt like it. It was way too much for me, and I didn't like, again, the obsession with our daughter, and I wanted to get further away from him. So I saved up all my money, and I got us a place in Elk Grove Village, and I'm literally paying all the bills. I'm paying rent. I'm paying for the car. I am paying everything. He wasn't working, and if he did work, it was very shoddy. It would be like Lyft and Uber, and it would be twice a month if I was lucky. So I was paying for everything. We were living in Elk Grove Village. We had talked about having a second child because at this time Sasha was 2.5. We wanted the children to be 2 years apart. I never had a sibling growing up. He had a brother. He said that having a brother was great. We did a lot of research, and we found that it would be the best decision to have a second child. and have that child be from, you know, the same father.
Right.
So we ended up doing that. And that was the easiest pregnancy of my life because, it was a son, so I think that mattered a lot to him. He was very kind to me. He did not yell at me. He did not scream at me. He didn't cheat on me. He was just, like, very good to me during that pregnancy. So I was not expecting what came next. So we ended up having my son, and I was immediately attached to my son. I mean, it was instantaneous. Because I got to do, have the child with you right away, skin to skin. I got to do skin to skin with my son. I didn't get to do skin to skin with my daughter because I had to have an epidural. I did not have an epidural with my son. My son was without an epidural. So I took my son to work with me. I did not let my son out of my sight. I was so attached to my son. My ex was not at all attached to my son. He didn't like being alone. He didn't like being around him. He didn't like being with him. He didn't like watching him. It seemed like my son was a nuisance to him. Like, he just ignored my son. And I thought it was the strangest thing because he was obsessed and always with my daughter and very loving towards my daughter and showed no affection whatsoever towards my son, which was odd. But besides that, he started to get very hostile and very, like, mean towards me. For no reason. And it went from things were okay to things were, like, horrible. He was calling me names. He was very rude. And then one night in particular in August, which it was actually right before my birthday because my birthday was September 8th and this was August. And in August, I was on my phone and I was just laying in bed and James was in the front room in his pack and play. Sasha, I believe, was at her grandfather's, and he came in the bedroom. I was on my phone, and he just grabbed me. He held me down. I remember looking to the side, and he inserted himself into me anally without any lubricant whatsoever as he was holding me down. I screamed. I cried. I told him to stop. I had no idea what was going on. At one point, I went limp because I was in shock. And then when he was finished, he looked right at me and he said, "How did you enjoy your anal rape?" And I didn't know what to think. I was literally, even just talking about it today, it was one of those what the fuck just happened moments. Like, you can't even comprehend
right.
it. This is a man who you have been with, you know, since you were 17, and all of a sudden he just decides to sexually assault you. And he literally looks in your face and says, "How did you enjoy it?" It was very surreal for me. I ran into the bathroom. I was crying. I didn't know what to say to him. I didn't say anything to him. And I messaged one of my friends. Yeah.
Like, did he ever say what made him do that? Like,
he did the next day. I couldn't even talk to him about it that day because I was so in shock and in so much pain, and I didn't even know what to say. That day to me is still like, it's one of those insane moments where I don't know. I was literally frozen in shock because it just made no sense to me. So I messaged my friend, and I'm like, "I think I was just raped." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And I explained to him what happened. He goes, "Yeah, you were raped." So the next day, I confronted him about it, and I was like, "I don't want you to touch me. I don't want you to be with me. I don't want anything to do with you." And I told him I wanted to leave. I told him I wanted out, and I was done. And he told me that, he had been sexually abused as a child. He told me he was really messed up in the head, that he had multiple personality disorder and he was afraid of telling me, and that he wanted to get help. He didn't want to lose the kids. And I told him basically, I was like, I want nothing to do with you and I'm going to see other people, but we can stay together for the kids in a home. And if you're actually getting better, then this will work. If you're not getting better, then it's not going to work. But I wanted to give him that chance because I felt bad for him. You know, I also had been sexually assaulted as a child, so I feel like he was kind of playing on those emotions, and I felt terrible for him. You know, for someone to be that sick, you know, it was hurting me to think that he was hurting that bad, that he would do something like that. I was looking at it from a very naive perspective. And at that time, I was 21 years old. And now looking back at it, I should have ran that day. I should have gotten the kids. I should have grabbed them, and I should have gotten the hell out of there. Because if anyone could do that to someone they claimed to have loved and had children with, that should have been like, you need to get the hell out of that house. And I wish I did that. I really do, looking back. But anyways, so things continued. Like I said, I was going to see other people, and I did. I found someone that I was seeing spontaneously. And he, even though he agreed to me seeing other people, he was very against it. He would call me a whore in front of our children. He would berate me. He would say horrible things to me. He would tell me to kill myself. Things would just get worse and worse and worse. He kept bringing my daughter to his father, even though I kept telling him not to. I had to hire a babysitter paying $200 a month, which was one of my really good friends, just so she wouldn't go there. She started displaying signs that she was being abused. She would have random bruises that she couldn't tell us where she got them. And then she would play out these scenarios where her toys were hitting each other and hurting each other. She would say, "Grandpa's hitting me." She started saying that she was being touched, at which point the babysitter and I both went to Tom and said, "You got to talk to your father." And he never talked to his father. And then we also told him we want her to see a child psychologist. And I actually called up a child psychologist before the custody case even started. So fast forward 7 months in advance, things were just becoming too much. I was working 90 to 120 hours a week. I was totally burning myself out. I was taking James with me. I was trying to make sure food was on the table and keep my sanity. Unfortunately, with the assault and the way that he was acting and the emotional and psychological abuse that was constant, I was not able to keep my sanity, and I ended up breaking, and I had to actually put myself in the hospital for about a week because I seriously felt suicidal, and I said that I did, and I voluntarily put myself in the hospital to be better because I didn't want my kids to lose their mother. And then when I got out of the hospital, things were better for like maybe a week. He was very nice to me. He was very kind to me. Again, it was like a honeymoon thing where he had pretended like he had changed. It was a total different person, which I didn't care about. I still didn't want anything to do with him, but it seemed like he was getting somewhat better. And then in March of 2019, the same thing happened where I was just laying in bed, and my son was in his bedroom, because we had moved. I had gotten us a house in Elgin, so we were living in a three-bedroom home, total upgrade, and this was like right after, it was either right before I went in the hospital or right after, I cannot remember, but I remember him literally coming to the hospital just so he could get rent, so I could still pay the bill while I was in a mental hospital. So that tells you a lot, that the person who is in a mental hospital is still paying the bills. So in March of 2019, it was the same scenario where I'm basically just laying on a bed. James is in the next room, and he comes in, and I had just gotten him a job finally. I had applied to 200 places for him, got him at a job at a factory, because we could not do it anymore. I mean, the money was getting so thin, and something had to give. So I basically forced him to get a job, which I'm sure he didn't appreciate. And I'm wondering if that's where this next act came from. But he came in. I was laying on the bed. And, again, he held me down. He grabbed me. My face was directly in the pillow. I was screaming. I was crying. I told him to stop. He said he would not stop until he came. After he was finished, while I was trying to pull him out of me, I was grabbing – it was literally a mattress, and I was grabbing the edge of the mattress trying to pull myself out from under him which it didn't work because his weight was far greater than mine. So when he was finally done, I ran into the bathroom and I started crying, and he ran in after me, washed his hands, and then flicked the water in my face and just left. And when he left, I called my friend and I was like, I can't do it anymore. He had made threats to throw me down the stairs of our new home, which I was paying for and I had gotten for him. And he threatened to kill me by throwing me down the stairs. He had threatened to throw a TV on top of me 15 times. He told me I'd have to explain how that happened to the police. Things were escalating very quickly. With that assault, he told me that if I didn't comply, he was going to lock me in the attic. So I told my friend all of this, and I was like, I need to get out of here. I can't do it anymore. You know, can you help me? And she was in New Hampshire. She had a big home. And she was like, yeah, we'll make it happen. You know, anything you need. Because we literally had text messages, me and my ex, back and forth, where he talked about how he had narcissistic personality disorder. He told me that he was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder. He admitted to assaulting me, you know, and she told me, okay, let's do this. So she sent the itinerary. She sent the plane tickets to my email. A couple days later, I went to work. Well, before I did all this, I'd actually written on like this PTSD site what had happened to me. And I never said that I was raped because I didn't want to raise any red flags. I didn't want anyone calling the police because I already had a plan to get out. And I didn't want anything messing that up and ruining the lives of my children. So when I was on this site, some idiot called the police and actually reported from a different state. And my ex was gotten hold of. I'm not sure how. He never said. I don't know if this person Facebooked him or what. And he started freaking out. And he was like, you know, you're going to have the police come pick me up at this new job. You're going to ruin our lives. And, you know, you're going to make everything worse for us. You know, he threatened to take the kids and take them to Poland because he has EU citizenship, you know, and I was absolutely terrified. And I told him straight out, I said, I never said, you know, in this post that I was raped. I said, you did rape me, but I never said in this post that I was raped. So I basically tried to calm him down. Didn't really work. I was terrified at that point, because I knew he would be coming back. The day after we went to his father's house for breakfast, things definitely seemed weird. He was super quiet. He didn't say anything, but then he started messaging me. He pretended to go to a therapy appointment. When he got back from his therapy appointment, that's when he was messaging me and talking about how the therapist said that he had a dissociative fugue state and all these things that seemed like really legitimate and seemed like something that actually came from the mouth of a therapist. And I was like, okay, right. Well, you know, what do you need me to do? Like, how do you need me to help you with stress, et cetera? And he was like, you know, no, you don't need to help me. It's just me, you know, I'm going to try smoking weed. I'm going to try doing this, anything, you know, to get me to relax, basically. So I was like, okay. So the day after that, I had to go to work. I still had the plan to leave. He always brought James to me when I was at work because I would take James to work with me, and I thought it was really weird that he purposely didn't have James. So I said, "Go, can you please get James and bring him to me while I'm at work?" And he brought James, and when he brought James, he confronted me, and he's like, "How could you do the one thing that would make me kill myself?" And my boss came out. My boss's husband came out. My client was there. My client's husband was there. And he just starts going on about like how he knows. And I was like, you kept raping me and threatening to kill me. What was I supposed to do? And he, you know, he said, I want you to come with me in the car. And my boss is like, you're not going with him in the car. She had been through an abusive relationship herself, and she knew that if I went in the car with him, I probably wouldn't come back. And she kept telling me not to go in the car with him. And they all were telling him to leave. And at first he would not leave. He told me that if he was going to be going, this was when he was telling me that he was going to kill himself, that the kids would be going with him. And that was, of course, very concerning for all of us. And we kept telling him to leave and to, of course, you know, leave the kids with us. and he finally left. I did not have Sasha at this point. She was at his father's house because he had taken her there without letting me know. I had James. And anyways, so after that had happened, I went into the bathroom and I got a call from him, and he told me, like, now that we were completely done, he could tell me the truth. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I don't have any of those disorders. I was lying the whole time. I just did that to keep assaulting you. And he used the word raping. And after that, I was just done. I had no pity for him. I had no sympathy for him. And I let my boss know, like, I need to leave to go file a police report. I filed the police report. I did the rape kit. I did everything, you know, that I was supposed to do. And they actually arrested him. I even had text messages. I showed them the text messages where he admitted to assaulting me multiple times. It was literally in 5 different communications between text messages and Facebook messages. So they arrested him. They told me they would let me know what was going to happen. The next day I get a call from his friend, and his friend is like, oh no, it wasn't a call. I'm sorry. It was a Facebook message. His friend's like, they're letting him out. I was like, what? What do you mean they're letting him out? Why am I not getting a call from a detective? Why am I not getting a call from a prosecutor? Why am I not getting a call from anyone of importance? Why am I talking to you? And I called the detective, and she's like, yeah, they're letting him out, but he said he wouldn't go see you. I was like, yeah? And you trust that? I mean, there was no order of protection. There was no anything, and I was freaking out. The cop even came by, the one who had taken the complaint and everything, and he looked down, and he was like really sad, and he gave me some paperwork that I was supposed to sign, which were like my rights as a victim and everything else that no one had told me and I had never signed. And then there was paperwork that was misfilled out that should have been correctly filled out. And I said, am I going to have to share custody with my rapist? Like, am I going to have to send this man to see my kids? And he literally looked down at the floor and said, I hope not. And he just laughed. So at that point, I was told to get an order of protection. I got an emergency order of protection. The judge even said that if he didn't grant me the order of protection, he was afraid what would happen to me. So he granted it immediately. Then I had the plenary order of protection. Tom actually admitted in court that he sent every single text message. He sent all the Facebook messages saying that he assaulted me. He never denied it. And then he admitted to assaulting me, but said he admitted it because he wanted to break up with me, which made no sense because there was messages literally like confessing his love for me and how he never wanted me to leave him and how I was the best thing that ever happened to him. He even said in court that I was the best thing that ever happened to him. So the judge had granted the plenary order of protection, had the kids as protected parties. Everything seemed to be going well. My lawyer was shocked because apparently this judge is known for not being too kind to women. So after this all happened, she goes, well, don't worry about everything. Everything should be good. You don't have to come to court the next time because all we're doing is setting up supervised visits. So I get a call at work, and she's just like, I don't know how to tell you this, but he's not doing supervised visits. And at this point, they had no psych evals. They had text messages that said that this man was a danger, that he thought he was a danger to his own children, that he had no sense of ethics, and they still wanted to give him unsupervised visits. And this was a man who admitted to assaults. It made absolutely no sense to anyone. So they give him this unsupervised visitation. My daughter comes back the first day with bruising on the back of her legs. She had a bruise underneath her right butt cheek. It was gray and yellow. It was very dark. She had this dark, deep lower back bruise. And she had already had like a red mark there, but it was very dark, and it was more than it was the last time I had seen it. So anyways, I called up my best friend, who was also the babysitter for my daughter. And I was like, what should I do here? I don't want to, you know, upset the apple cart. I'm concerned about the custody case. She's just like, just take it to the cops and have them document it. Well, there was already a case with a DCFS and the Elgin police because there was a hard drive that was found in the back of the car. So we shared a car. He was the one that drove the car. I was the one that paid for the car because I had the credit and he had the driving ability. When he was arrested, they took the car. After he was arrested, they gave me the car because it was in my name. When the car was found, I went through the car and there was a hard drive. I had some friends with me and they had a computer. So I looked at the hard drive because I wanted to see, you know, at what was on it, especially after him admitting that he had lied to me this whole time. So I looked at the hard drive and I was just absolutely disgusted. There was a folder marked LOL. And I clicked on this folder and it was these disgusting animated images of children that were depicted like 3 and 4 years old doing graphic sex acts with adults and other children. At that point, I had seen enough. I was completely mortified. I called the detective on my assault case. I let her know. She said to bring the drive in. I said, we can even bring the computer in if you have concerns about that. She said it was not necessary. So she took the drive. I did not know of any other content on it at that point. So we get into, you know, this whole police report regarding my daughter. So we ended up going to the police because of the hard drive concerns, because my daughter had a irritated looking and red private area, as well as the specific bruising and where it was. They wanted me to take her to the hospital. So I took her to Northwest Community Hospital. She was diagnosed with a contusion and domestic concerns, which again was reported to DCFS. So after she was diagnosed with this, they said there was no need to do a sexual assault kit. They didn't have any of those concerns, and I trust the doctor. So I was like, fine, no problem. Then I get a call from a Dr. Gregory at Children's Laureate Hospital saying that she wants me to come in and have my daughter do an assault kit and all this other stuff. And I was like, well, when do you want me to do this? And the doctor said it wasn't necessary. And she said, we can have her come in Monday, which was already much later from the day that she would have been supposedly assaulted. So I was like, well, if we do it on Monday, I mean, there's not even going to be any evidence. I don't know what you're, you know, looking for. But she wanted us to come in, so I said, fine. Then she calls me and she goes, oh, never mind. We don't need you to come in because there's no investigation against the grandfather, which is Jerry Beal. And I was like, well, I have the paperwork from the DCFS investigator, which was 2 days ago, saying that there is. And an investigation goes on for at least 2 weeks. So she's like, okay, you can come in then. So we came in. My daughter's behavior was very weird. You know, she grabbed an attendant's breast. She didn't even notice when she was anally swabbed. And the vaginal exam, she was actually opening herself up for, and it was highly concerning. Like, this was all very normal to her. So after that was all done, I go to my lawyer. I let my lawyer know everything that's been happening. Sasha had even made disclosures that were on videotape because I had put up cameras in my house regarding the order of protection.
Right.
So my lawyer is like, okay, we need to go for an emergency order of protection at this, or we need to go for an emergency to get you full custody at this point, because she had major concerns. I had major concerns. Everyone had major concerns. So we go in front of the judge. We give him all this evidence, and this was on April 25th. And he's like, okay, well, the grandfather can't be anywhere near the kids. And we're like, okay. His lawyer, my ex's lawyer, pipes up and is like, well, he lives with his dad. And literally Judge Dalton says, okay, well, he can just go in another room then. And I was just like, are you kidding me? And I asked my lawyer, I go, is there anything we can do about this? And she's like, no, there's nothing we can do. And she just looked sad. And I didn't really know what was going on, but at this point she seemed pretty hopeless. And she didn't tell me anything. So we go to the next court date, which is May 2nd, and there's a GAL there. And the GAL is basically talking about me right in front of me and about, you know, abuse in my past and everything else, and talking about my private history, about my PTSD, depression, and all this other stuff, basically making me out to be crazy. Well, that was interesting because at the same time, Tom and his friend are stating that my daughter was showing concerning behavior, like sexual concerning behavior. So they were admitting that there was an issue too. So everyone was in conclusion that she was acting strange. And then you had all this evidence of the investigations that were going on, the DCFS investigation, the child pornography investigation, the sexual assault investigation, because that was actually being reviewed at that time. So all these things were still open. And the judge is like, nope, we're not restricting any parenting time from dad. Dad is totally fine. You know, there's nothing wrong. I'm not changing anything. And this GAL was saying horrible things about me. I was not allowed to say anything. And my attorney kept trying to present evidence, and she was shut down every single time. And I kind of just lost it. You know, I just said, you know, this is ridiculous. And I walked out because I couldn't believe this is how a courtroom actually operated. It made no sense to me that nobody was allowed to show any evidence. And this judge was just listening to this woman who didn't know me, who didn't know my children, and was completely biased. And it didn't even make any sense because I wasn't mean to her. I wasn't rude to her. I showed her no animosity, and she was completely against me from day one. So this all happened, and I go to my lawyer. I go, what is going on? This is very odd. She basically asked me to fire her right then and there. And I was like, I'm not going to fire you. You know, if I fire you, I've got nobody. And I mean, a lawyer is better than no lawyer. So she's like, you know, she just said, okay. And we go on with the same schedule, which at that point it was, he had 4 days of visitation for 6 hours. And then I had the rest and overnights. So anyways, I get a call from my lawyer, and she's like, unless you can pay me $1,000 a month, I need to withdraw from the case. I was like, what? I don't have $1,000 a month. I'm a CNA. I'm a single mom. How would I have $1,000 a month to pay you? So I said, okay, fine. I mean, if that's the only option, that's what I'm going to have to do. So she told me that all she was doing was withdrawing on May 15th, and I really do believe this. I don't think she knew anything else was going on at that point. So on May 15th, I get this call from my roommates that the cops are there to take my kids. I was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean cops are there to take my kids? On what grounds? And they had a court order signed by the GAL and the judge taking my children for absolutely no reason. Apparently, there was an emergency motion done on the 15th that was never given to me. It was never given to my attorney. They did it right after my attorney withdrawal, which is highly illegal. And they took my children. And I even asked the cop because I was at work with my son. I was like, what is going on? And the cop said, I have no idea. Like, I'm calling the FBI because I don't understand what's happening. I mean, even the cops didn't want to take my kids. It made no sense. They're like, you know, they told Tom, we're coming back later. She can't even be here till 8 p.m. We're not taking these kids. So if they didn't take the kids then, my kids were obviously in no danger. There was no immediate danger. There was no issue. You came back at 8 p.m. to take children. So you came in at noon. So you wait 8 hours to take my kids, but you're trying to say there's a danger and that I'm a threat to my children. And I didn't put up a fight. I handed my kids over. I didn't make things any worse than they were. And I went to court and I was like, I need an evidentiary hearing. I want an evidentiary hearing. I am entitled to one for you to take my children. And the judge is just like, well, this is a temporary motion. This is a temporary motion. This temporary motion went on for months. You can only do a temporary motion for 30 days, and then there is an evidentiary hearing. You cannot have a temporary motion that keeps going on and on and on and on. It's illegal.
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you think his father had parts in on this whole situation? Like, do you think he paid the judges?
I legally cannot make accusations like that, but my opinion would be yes. I mean, Tom has no money. He hasn't worked more than 3 months in his entire life. He has absolutely no money. There's no way he would have been able to get any money. And if there is truly this child porn, which there is child porn, then I believe that's definitely money that's under the table. And that's probably a great deal of money. So it does make sense to me that they would be able to pay off all these players, in my personal opinion, especially with what happens to my son going forward. So anyway, so they assigned my babysitter, who was my best friend at the time, to be the to be the court supervisor. They did this without her even being present. They did this without even asking her. They just assigned her. And if she didn't do it, she would have been in contempt of court. And in addition, I wouldn't have gotten to see my children. They also made the days where I had to see my children my work days. And I couldn't just change my work schedule because I'm a CNA. And I have clients that are private and are very sick individuals. So I wasn't able to exercise Monday. And I told them that I'm not going to be able to exercise Monday visitation. So I did Tuesday and Wednesday. It was ridiculous. Almost every single week there was a problem. There was a new bruise. There was a new disclosure from my daughter. She was saying horrible things. She was saying things like grandpa put mommy finger and daddy finger inside her. She was talking about her brother being hit in his private area. I mean, it was sickening. And she wasn't just telling me, she was telling the court supervisor. Well, the court supervisor is the eyes and ears for the GAL. So the court supervisor is reporting all this stuff to the GAL. She's taking pictures. She's contacting DCFS. She's not being listened to at all, even though she was assigned by the court. So this continues on, and it's getting absolutely ridiculous. I get this email from Tom on Our Family Wizard stating that my son is in the hospital for a prolapsed rectum. And this was while I was at work. And at first I'm like, okay, well, you know what, kids can get those. I mean, it, typically you just put it back in. It's no big deal. And, you know, it's constipation, it's straining, whatever. So I wasn't highly concerned. Then he tells me my son has been in the hospital for 3 days. And I'm like, what? Why would he be in the hospital for a prolapsed rectum for 3 days? And I called the nurse because I'm done talking to him at this point. I don't want to hear anything else he has to say because he doesn't know anything about the medical field. I actually do. So I'm talking to the nurse, and the nurse is like, yeah, it's popped out 3 times. We've done a surgical procedure. It keeps popping out. And I was like, what? I mean, none of this is adding up. We had my son multiple times, you know, because of the supervised visitations. He never had an issue with constipation. He never had an issue with straining. He had never had any rectal problems whatsoever. And he ate everything, you know. So we're immediately concerned. I wanted to go see my son. So I tell the GAL, you know what, I'm going to go see my son. And that's that. And she's like, okay, you can see your son. So I'm on the way with my boss to go see my son. And then I get this call from, or not this call, I'm sorry, this message from Tom saying, I can only see my son if the court supervisor comes with me. I was like, no, screw you. I'm seeing my son. He's extremely sick. We don't know what's causing this. And I have my boss coming with me. And the court supervisor is my best friend who isn't even available. So we go there, I show them my order, my protection and everything else. And they're like, okay, well, you can only see your son if we have the head of the pediatric floor of St. Alexia's Hospital watch you with him. I'm like, what? I mean, I'm sorry, who has that kind of power? The head of the pediatric unit of St. Alexia's Hospital has nothing better to do than watch me for a half hour with my one-year-old son. So I go to see my son. He's all taped up. The doctor told me he just had an enema, or the nurse. I'm sorry, it was the nurse. She tells me that his rectum had popped out multiple times that day. There was a meal chart on the board, so they were going to keep him overnight. And I'm asking her, like, what's going on? And she can't explain anything to me. She has no idea. All she's telling me is that it keeps popping out, and they don't know how to fix it. So I'm with my son, you know, he's with me, we're playing, we're talking, his eyes light up when he sees me, and this pediatric person is watching me the whole time, and it was the weirdest feeling in the world. So I kiss my son goodbye, I put him back, and they had him like in this like glass chamber looking thing, kind of with bars on it. It was weird. And then I left, and there, my ex was like, I want you to talk to the social worker before you leave. And at this point, I had not said anything about abuse. I had no sexual assault concerns. I had not said any of this. And I was like, why do you want me to talk to the social worker? And then he's like, well, I'm sure you're going to say it's abuse. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I go talk to the social worker. And in my head, I'm thinking like neglect, because how could this possibly happen without neglect? So I talked to the social worker. And I'm like, this you know, this is ridiculous. Did you call DCFS? And she's like, no, I saw no reason to. I'm like, you've had a one-year-old in a hospital for 3 days, going on four, multiple surgical procedures, a rectum that continues to pop out, and you don't see a reason to call DCFS? I go, do you know about the history of this? Do you know about the assault to me? Do you know about the child pornography? Do you know about all these concerning environmental factors? And she's like, are you telling me how to do my job? I'm like, I said nothing. I was like, okay, I can't even do this. I just walked away. And this woman was very young. I mean, she couldn't have been more than 5 years older than me. It was strange too that they just had me randomly talk to this lady who clearly did not know how to do her job. Because if she did, my son would have never left that hospital, because you can't even release a child unless they have gone 24 hours without their rectal prolapse. I actually had to look that up because of everything that went on.
Are these people crazy, like sick in the head, like everybody that's involved? Because it don't make no sense to me that the system is this jacked up that they can't see abuse when they see abuse.
I know. It was insane to me. I couldn't explain it, and that's why I had to document literally everything, because none of this made any sense to me. So we're leaving the hospital, and my boss is like, call DCFS, call DCFS. I'm like, no, I'm not calling DCFS. They haven't done anything. They haven't helped anything. In fact, it's probably made things worse. I don't want to talk to DCFS. I'm done with all of this. You know, DCFS clearly doesn't know what the hell they're doing. And she's like, fine, then I'm going to call them. So she called them, and she told them everything, and next thing you know, they're Johnny on the spot with everything. And I get this message from Tom that my son is being emergency released from the hospital. And this was maybe a half an hour after DCFS was called. So that was very odd, because he should have been kept in the hospital. So my ex was like, oh, I'm going to have Sasha and James come see you. So he contacts, or he drops them off. I'm with them. My court supervisor is with us. I'm with my son. I'm changing his diaper. My daughter wanted to hold his hand, which I thought was really strange, because she's never, ever held his hand while he was getting changed. So she holds his hand, and when I'm undoing his diaper, his rectum is literally, like, pulsating. And it was super concerning, because I was just like, this is crazy. But then again, I was realizing, like, well, you know what, he had surgical procedures. He had an enema. You know what, maybe this is why. You know, this was something that I had never witnessed before, so I didn't know, like, what was causing this. It was very odd to me. So my daughter says she's got to go to the bathroom. So we're going to the bathroom, and we leave the door open like a crack, because she has to supervise me doing absolutely everything. So I'm with my daughter in the bathroom, and all of a sudden she's like, someone hurt James. And I was like, who hurt James? And she said, Grandpa hurt James. Grandpa put a toothbrush in his butt and then pushed him off. Grandpa put a toothbrush in his butt. Then she goes, I tried to carry him off the bed, but Grandpa pushed him down. And the way she said this was so odd. I mean, it was just like flat. There was no emotion in her voice. It was like she had just told me, you know, she went to the park or she ate breakfast. It was the strangest thing. And I just looked at her and I was like, what did you just say? And then she just smiled and she said nothing. It was super concerning. And my court supervisor heard it. She immediately contacted the GL, because she was like, what the hell? We were both like stunned. So we contacted the GL. The GL was like, oh, DCFS has already been informed. So then I get this message literally at – right after I had dropped off the kids to Tom, that DCFS had taken the kids. I'm not allowed to know where they are. He can't know where they are, and they're being taken into DCFS custody. I was like, well, I haven't heard anything from the DCFS worker, which is who I should have heard things from first. The DCFS exactly. worker finally called me at 9 o'clock at night. Her name was Karen Johnson Wren. I was literally on my way to work. She starts yelling at me on the phone, saying this was all my fault, and I'm doing this to my kids, and this is why they're being taken away, and, like, making all these crazy accusations. And I'm like, excuse me? Who do you think you are? And then she literally said at the end of the call, I think I'm DCFS. I was like, wow, okay. And so I'm like freaking out at this point. So I'm calling DCFS the next couple days and nobody's saying that I'm under investigation. Well, if I'm not under investigation, why am I not getting my visitation time then that's court ordered? And I kept bringing this up and I was representing myself pro se. And I was like, okay, well now I'm not getting my court ordered visitation and I'm not getting my evidentiary hearing. So I'm bringing all this up. Nobody's telling me what's going on with my son. My ex is telling me that all of a sudden his rectum is healed and he's doing great and there's nothing wrong. This is what I'm being told. So I didn't know this. So I go into court and his lawyer starts talking about how the situation was getting worse and all this other stuff, but wouldn't go into it. The DAL is talking about how 8 mandated reporters contacted DCFS, which when you're talking about mandated reporters, that's nurses, that could be doctors, that could be pediatricians, that could be teachers, that could be anybody. Like, mandated reporters are professionals that would know to report. And typically, right, mandated reporters don't get involved. So the fact you have 8 of these people contacting DCFS is insane. And she's saying, but they dropped the case. And I'm like, what? You have 8 mandated reporters who have contacted them and they just dropped the case? And she's saying this, that the kids were given back to Tom and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like sitting there telling me, like saying, I want my evidentiary hearing. They're completely ignoring me. They're saying that if I want to see my son, that I have to pay to see him now. And I have to sign a piece of paper basically saying that I'm a danger to my children. I'm like, no, you're having me do this so that it will affect me in every single court. And it's going to screw me over for everything I try to do going forward, because you have no evidence that I'm a danger to my kids, and then you want to put this evidence on. Exactly. So I was like, this is weird. So at this time, I was seeing a therapist at the Elgin Police Department because I get free therapy because I was sexually assaulted. So while I'm seeing this therapist, I start talking to her about the child porn and the case and everything else. And she's like, has anyone said anything to you about all that? I was like, no. She goes, you know, I can see those reports. I was like, you can? She goes, yeah, I work here. I am privy to those reports. She goes, you need to FOIA the child pornography. And I was like, what? I didn't think there was anything to the child pornography because it was all animated stuff. So she goes, no, you need to FOIA it. So I actually, in addition to her telling me this, she goes, and by the way, you know, Julie Pirtle called me. And I think there's something mentally wrong with that woman. I said, what do you mean you think there's something mentally wrong with her? She was like, she was trying to tell me that you fit the perfect image of someone who would kill your children. And when I asked her for any evidence, you know, she couldn't give me any. And at this point, I'm like, okay, something is very wrong. What is going on here? So I FOIA the child pornography. And at first, the person did not want to give it to me. They were literally trying to tell me I wasn't allowed to have it. Blah, blah, blah. I literally got on the phone and I started crying to this person. I was like, if this was your kid, I know that you would want to have this. I said, I am in a situation where I am terrified for the lives of my children. Please help me. And this woman actually sent it to me, and I don't think she was ever supposed to, because I've never heard from her again. I don't think she works at the Elgin Police Department anymore. I'm pretty sure she was fired. But the information she sent me proved that there were 280 missing children that hadn't even been identified by the NCMEC, which is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It had over 700 prepubescent children, the majority of which were in their underwear. There were 5 images of legitimate child pornography. And there were real kids on that drive, in addition to all the disgusting anime crap. So at this point, I'm just like, what the F? I could not even believe this. And then, you know, I'm putting two together, and my son and the rectal issue, and then you have my daughter making all these disclosures, and my head was literally spinning at this point, and I was freaking out. I actually called and reported my kids missing. I was like, I went to the police station. I said, you need to help me. I explained to them everything that was going on. And, you know, they told me I wouldn't be the first person to come into the police station looking for my kids, and I wouldn't be the last. And I told them, like, I'm not leaving until you at least prove to me that there is a DCFS investigation, that you give me the paperwork. They're like, oh, we know where your children are, but we're not going to tell you. And they were taunting me. And not one person had told me I was under investigation. There was no record with DCFS that I was under investigation. So all of this that was being done was completely illegal. So fast forward to October 31st, because I'm not signing their crap, and I'm refusing to say I'm a danger to my kids. So it was 3 months that I hadn't seen my children. I get this message from Tom on October 31st, 2019. I was at work with a client. It was about 10:30 at night. And he tells me, it wasn't even a message from him. I'm totally wrong. It was a doctor who called me. A doctor called me on the phone. I don't remember his name. It was about 10:30 at night. And he tells me, you have to come to the hospital. James is very sick. And I'm immediately thinking horrible things because they hadn't even let me see my child without a supervisor. And he was really sick. So it's like, what do you mean he's really sick? I told him I was at a job. I told him I didn't drive. I said, can I come there in the morning? You know, once I get off the job, I can't just leave my client. He goes, if you need to come here, we don't know if you know he'll make it through the night. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to get there. So I went to the hospital, and me and my mom were there. My mom met me because I had called her. And this lady comes up to us. I don't know who exactly she was. She was a nurse, a receptionist, whatever. She brings us into this room. And my son wasn't there. And I screamed, where is my son? And the doctor just looked at the floor and said he didn't make it. And I said, what do you mean he didn't make it? There was nothing wrong. There was the prolapse rectum. He wouldn't even let me finish the sentence. He wouldn't even let me talk about the prolapse rectum. He just talked over me. And he's like, that had nothing to do with it. And I asked to see my son, and they brought my son out to me. And he was still slightly warm. And I remember holding him, and I felt his body go cold. And it was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It was the worst moment of my entire life. It was horrifying. And I looked at my son, and he had these red marks all over his stomach. And I had seen people, like, die in front of me in my line of work. And I pointed them out to the nurse. I'm like, what is that? There's red marks all over his stomach. And she's like, oh, that's just what happened when people die. I was like, no, it's not. Like, I know what rigor mortis looks like. That's not what rigor mortis looks like. It literally looked like handprints that were red all over my son's stomach. And they asked me to leave. They literally told us we couldn't see him anymore. We couldn't visit with him, that apparently this expert coroner was coming, their medical examiner, whatever they said, and we had to leave immediately. And my grandmother was literally on her way. And they said, oh, nope, you have to go. They barely even gave us any time with my son. So we left.
That was disrespectful.
It was extremely disrespectful. It was more than disrespectful, actually, and it was extremely hurtful because those were the last moments that I even got to be with my son.
Yeah.
I didn't even get to be with my son alive. So immediately after this happened, we actually tried to go back into court. I had a lawyer who was willing to represent me, and the judge did not care. This was a new judge because the judge recused himself that he made all these horrible decisions. He recused himself October 10th, which was very odd because that's 3 weeks before my son passed. The GAL excused herself from the case October 26th. No. It's the day she recused herself was 6 days before my son passed. I know that for a fact. So I don't remember quite what day it was, but it was 6 days before he passed, which was, again, very suspect. It was like they all knew something horrible was going to happen. And in my opinion, I think they knew my son wasn't going to make it. I think that's what all this stuff was about, me doing the supervised visitation and not wanting me alone with my child and not wanting me to see what was actually going on. Because when I got the medical records, finally, it showed that there was a lot more going on than what they had told me. So anyways, we go into court. The judge doesn't care. He doesn't care about my daughter. He doesn't care about me. He's only concerned about my social media. He says I can't see my daughter, that he's not lifting anything. He's not changing anything. He's not doing emergency motion. And at this point, DCFS actually had changed custody and put my daughter in the care of my ex's mother. So he wasn't even custodial parent anymore. It was his mother, which is, that in itself is also not legal without there being some sort of judgment or a case or whatever. So that didn't even make any sense, and they still weren't letting me see my daughter. So finally, after I, you know, we kept going to court, the judge is being pressured by outside parties to let me see my child. So he just starts letting me see my child. First, it was with my mother, which made no sense, because they had made multiple complaints about my mother, but I was seeing my daughter with my mother. They had this, the autopsy done. The first autopsy said that it was unexplained death due to natural causes, which I straight out called BS. I go, that makes no sense. There has to be a cause of death. You have to know what caused my son's death. And they're basically trying to say it was a SIDS death, or a sudden unexplained child death. I had my own forensic pathologist. She had preliminary concerns of suffocation because there was discoloration around his nose and his mouth. There was also that deep tissue back bruise. And basically what she said, though, is she had concerns about suffocation, but without the police confirming that and without them being, you know, suspicious of suffocation as well, there's no case because suffocation is so hard to prove without that component. So when she wasn't even allowed to see his organs or his neck organs, which was very odd. They sent my son's body to her without any of his neck organs, which include the hyoid bone. And these are organs that are never removed and given to a pathologist without them. No heart, no brain. So she did not have much to work with. She didn't even have tissues to look at. About a year later, it was almost a year, they finally let her go see his neck organs, and it was with their permission in their facility, the Cook County Medical Examiner's office, and she had to be supervised by someone, even though she was more skilled than the person who did the autopsy. The person who did the autopsy was a fellow. He was not legally licensed to practice forensic pathology, only clinical pathology. My forensic pathologist had been doing this for 11 years. She was licensed for 10 of those years, and she had far more credibility. So that was very odd in itself. So she said that it's a cervical spinal cord injury, which if it was a cervical spinal cord injury, that's not something that just happened. There's no mention of any incident whatsoever in the police report. And it turned out that my ex actually lied about his alibi. He was not working. So he had stated to the police that he had left for work, that he had just put James on the bed. The whole story was James was found on the bed after playing with electronic device by the stepmother. Well, after she had come out of the shower and his lips were blue. That was their story. That story does not match a cervical spinal cord injury. So after that happened, She contacted DCFS, she contacted the police, she gave them autopsy reports. She was like, this has to be investigated because you have to figure out how this injury was caused because she cannot do that. She doesn't have that ability. She can only say what the cause of death was. She doesn't have any tissues to go off of. She doesn't have anything else to go off of. That has to be on the police and the prosecutor and whoever else. So that's why, you know, we've been doing protests. That's why we have justice for James because, I mean, this is just, all of this is ridiculous. Finally, I was given the actual medical records because what happened was this judge that was on the case, at this time I had 4 days with my daughter. And during COVID, I still had no rights, no medical rights, no educational rights, nothing. They didn't even let me come to my son's funeral. He was actually buried without my knowledge on one of my visitations with my daughter. They did that on purpose. I was visiting with my daughter. I was with my daughter, so I had no idea they were doing a funeral. And I was supposed to get last moments beforehand with my son, which they didn't even have the courtesy to give me that. So so we have this four-day thing going on. I got it's like 3.5 days for each of us. It was split up evenly. That's all I remember. But he had all the rights and whatever. And I was protesting that because I'm like, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I mean, this man is even a concern to DCFS. He's a concern to authorities. And yet, for whatever reason, I'm not being given any rights of my child, even though my child did not die in my custody with no known explanation to have a cervical spinal cord injury. So I'm, you know, I'm doing all this stuff, and the judge is trying to throw me in jail. The judge was trying to go on a gag order that was done in August from Judge Dalton. This is Judge Renee Cruz, and he basically was going to put me in jail without a jury, without a trial, for up to 6 months, and they can do longer. They don't care. You don't know if you're getting out at that point if you're thrown in jail. And I wouldn't have any contact with my daughter whatsoever. So she would be going to somebody whose custody my son died in, and I couldn't take that risk. So it was either 50-50 custody or jail, and my daughter would be gone from me forever. So I chose 50-50 custody. So I have 50-50 rights. I have medical and I have educational. So the first thing that I did with those newfound rights was I went and I got all of Jaden's medical records. And through these medical records, I found out that he was back and forth throughout hospitals from August to October, that he had 9 hospitalizations, that he had to have a rectal repair surgery, an emergency rectal repair surgery, because on August 13th, his rectum became incarcerated, grew to the size of an orange, and he would have died. Mm. He was in critical condition. On August 9th, the child protection specialist, MD, actually said that she had concerns of rectal penetrative abuse of my son. None of this was brought up in court. None of this was brought up by the GAL. The police didn't even put this in their report. This was all left out. It's all on the medical records. And I found all this out after I finally got medical rights of my child. And I have been posting about it. I have been showing it because I'm definitely not letting up. I mean, this is a disgusting cover-up. My son was already dying in August. So how are you going to say he had a sudden unexplained death in October when you have all these medical records already showing you how sick he was? It doesn't make any sense. So since all this has happened, my order of protection was renewed. So I now had an order of protection for 3 years because it was 2 years originally, and then it's extended for another year. And my ex has finally been arrested and charged for violating my order of protection. We do have a contempt hearing coming up because he refuses to follow any court orders. I have a protest coming up on the 2nd of July. I have a protest coming up on the 9th of July, and I have a protest coming up on the 30th of July. The 2nd and the 9th are going to be from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Palatine Police Station in Illinois, and the 30th is going to be from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Palatine Police Station in Illinois. We have invited the mayor. We have invited the Palatine Police Chief. We have a petition with over 17,700 signatures right now that are demanding that James' death investigation be reopened. There's a lot of publicity on this case. There's a lot of people who have been willing to help. We have a fabulous team that we have put together, and I truly believe that there will be justice for James because it's all in the documents. I mean, all your evidence is laying out right before you. I've got court transcripts. I've got police reports. I've got statements from lawyers. I've got statements from the GAL herself. I've got statements from the therapist who is the domestic specialist at the Elgin Police Department. You know, I have documents upon documents of documents to show and prove that everything I have stated today on this phone with you and on this radio show is fact. There is not one thing that I have told you today that I cannot back up. And that's the crazy thing.
Have you ever thought about going to the Supreme Court?
I have never thought about going to the Supreme Court. That's actually very interesting. However, we did go to the appellate court. We were trying to appeal the judge's decision of the temporary custody that he had given to my ex. And I actually think that did something because it was shortly after that judge recused himself, and that was Judge Dalton. So there's two judges that have recuse themselves. You have Judge Dalton and you have Judge Renee Cruz. Judge Renee Cruz was the presiding judge of family court. He is now the presiding judge of traffic court. Judge Dalton was a family court judge and an order protection judge. He is now an eviction judge. Both of these judges have been majorly demoted. They cannot be removed because they would have to be impeached by the American people. The GAL that was on the case, she was removed as a GAL from Kane County. The police commander, who was the one who put out that there was no foul play before an autopsy had even been done in regards to my son, and wrote a letter stating he had never received my forensic pathologist's preliminary findings, which was a blatant lie, he supposedly retired. This man was in either his late 40s or early 50s. He did not retire as a police commander. His father was the police chief during the Brown's Chicken murders. He could have become a police chief, no problem. So the fact that he just all of a sudden decided to retire makes me think that he was forced out of his position. John Walsh is gone from the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. I have him actually on recording stating he doesn't even know their policies. He could not explain to me why the brain, the heart, and the neck organs were not given to my forensic pathologist. It was just a mind-blowing call that I still have to this day, and I listen to it often where I'm just like, how do these people even live with themselves? I mean, how do they function in life knowing what they tried to do and what they tried to keep from the public and myself? I mean, did they really honestly think I would just believe my perfectly healthy 2-year-old son, who had no issues up until Mr. Beal was given custody, just died? Do they really expect me to believe that? I mean, no parent would accept that ever.
I just don't like the fact that we came to this point. The 2-year-old is gone. Your son is gone because the system failed him. Because who's supposed to protect him besides his mother is his father. And he failed to do that because he was caught up in his feelings. And the battle is not yet over. Because one, Tom has to answer to the man upstairs for his dirt. His father is going to have to answer for that. I always believe in karma.
Oh, yeah, and I agree with that, but I honestly feel like the tables are changing for him, too, because as I have said before, I don't think that if I was crazy, and if I was all making all this up, and if I was an alienated parent, and all this garbage that they tried to say about me, why would he be arrested and charged for harassing me on a parenting app? You know,
right.
It wouldn't make any sense. No one would do this to a man who's been belittled and hurt and all this other garbage for 2 years. I mean, no one would have the heart to do that to someone who has been a victim for 2 years. So he is no victim. He is a dangerous predator. And if he is continued to be given a leash, or if he's being continued to be given freedom without a leash, he is going to hurt another person. And that is my opinion. I'm not saying it's a fact, but given the evidence and what has already happened, this is a man capable of very violent offenses, and he will continue to be violent and hurt other people as long as he continues to be free. And that will be on Kane County. That will be on Cook County. That will be on the Palatine Police. That will be on every single individual who has just let this man walk and cause chaos, even when he's admitting to sexual assault. I mean, and that just mind blows people to begin with. I literally have an order of protection because he admitted to sexual assault, but there have been no charges for him sexually assaulting me. And this order of protection was extended. It makes absolutely no sense. So you're saying the assault happened. You're saying it's legitimate. It's even in the GAL report that she states he admitted to it. And nobody cares? Like, what? There's definitely something fishy going on, for sure.
Yeah. And in a way, you know, we all know, like, you always hear that it's two sides to every story. I get that. But when it comes to a child that can't really do anything for themselves, and they rely on you, and you, for somebody to hurt that child, especially when it's your own, you know, I get being a parent is very frustrating, and, you know, you wish you can turn back the time and do things different or whatever. I just can't see how people are hurting their own children, let alone somebody else's child, too. You know, that takes a lot out of me.
I completely agree. And the fact that this individual still has medical rights and educational rights of my child is just insane to me. That he should have any control after what has already been done, what has already been hidden. I mean, my child was dying and needed emergency rectal repair surgery at 1:00, and I wasn't even called. I wasn't called. I wasn't consulted. My child could have died that day, and nobody contacted me. And you're letting this man have medical rights? I mean, how just unbelievably asinine is that?
To me, it's just a show of they didn't care.
It's a show of they didn't care about my child, but it's also a show
exactly.
of they care about themselves and their reputations, and they knew that if this got out, it would blow everything up. And I don't think that the individuals who were involved in this ever expected me to be able to put out the story so clearly, to have the documents to prove it, and the evidence to show the American people. I think they expected that anyone who would listen to me would just automatically think that I was insane. Because when I come across these family court stories and I listen to them, a lot of them sound absolutely insane. Well, and so do these DCFS stories. Samaji Crosby was literally found under a couch, and nobody's been arrested for that. I mean, this was a little girl that DCFS had just seen the morning before. It said that the house was cleared. There was no problem. And then she was found under a couch, stuffed under a cushion. There's only 2 possible suspects. No one's been arrested. I mean, that in itself is insane. Then you have the Rika J case, where she was murdered by the stepmother, and they weren't even going to do anything until they found a video. And the video was how they were able to charge her. This little girl had bruises all over her body. She was severely abused. And they weren't going to do anything until they saw this video. I mean, what the hell? Who do we even stand for anymore if we don't stand for our children?
Exactly. And I just feel as though...
It makes me so angry.
I just think that, like I said, it's becoming a very cruel world in so many ways. Right? The devil is working. And
yeah, I agree.
I'm always saying the devil's a lie. So he can work all he wants. But I honestly, I'm hurt right now. I'm angry. I'm just I'm really lost for words that anybody can hurt their own 2-year-old child and do the things that has been done. Like, I know this is not something new in the world. This is something that happens almost every day, if not every other day. You know, every second of the day, somebody's out there abusing their own child in any kind of way, physical, mental, emotional, sexually. You know, any form of abuse is wrong. Whether you are a child, whether you are an adult, it doesn't matter. You should not be abusing nobody, because I believe that person is hurting as well, and their own way of dealing with that is hurting others because they're hurting.
Yes, it's often a cycle.
Yes.
You know, the abused become the abusers, unfortunately, but there are many, many people who have broken that cycle. You know, I'm one of those people
yes.
that have broken that cycle, and I have no sympathy for someone who doesn't break that cycle. I mean, you are making that decision. And as much as my ex has been through, and he has been through hell and back in his lifetime as a child, and I truly believe that, because I don't believe it was all fake. I mean, there were other people that even confirmed it, witnesses of the family who have said the same things about my ex's childhood. And I am sorry for what happened to him, but that gives absolutely no excuse for the choices that he chooses to make now and how he chooses to live his life and what he may have done to our son. And, I mean, to lie about your alibi the night of, to not show any sympathy since he's passed, to even go as far as to say your daughter's not grieving and that she doesn't care about James, I mean, that's not something that a parent does that is hurt or upset that their child has passed.
Yeah, like she's too young to understand how to grieve. You know, she hasn't had the opportunity to understand what is going on. Even though she can explain it, still, she doesn't understand what everybody else is going through, what we understand as adults. So how
exactly.
can you expect a child to grieve if they don't understand what they're grieving about? All she knows is my little brother's not here no more. And she may not do that.
Exactly,
but
and there's definitely a chance that she could have seen what happened, too.
Yeah, and I do feel for her. Like, I feel her pain right now. Like, even though she's not expressing it to what grieving is supposed to be, I just feel like here's a young lady that's going to grow up and have nightmares or, you know, have hatred towards certain people, not want to deal with society the way she should, you know, things that can mess her up when she grows up. And maybe she might feel a little guilt, like, darn, I should have been there. I should have helped my brother. My brother would be here if I helped him. And this is the part where, you know, you're doing the best that you can for your daughter. You're going to make sure she's okay and she understands what she's been through when the time is right. Her mind is such a sponge right there.
I mean, she's already expressed things that she's personally been through. And, I mean, the way she talks about the things that she's been through, and there's been cases on what she has disclosed and discussed with the police and with DCFS, it's just as terrifying. It's just as traumatic as what she may have seen happen to my son. I mean, these kids have clearly been through a lot, and you don't just have medical records like the ones my son has without some sort of significant trauma. There's nothing that can explain emergency rectal repair surgery with no underlying condition or the kind of constant prolapse rectums and no anal tone that are on these medical records. I mean, these medical records are literally something out of the frickin' Twilight Zone, because as a CNA, if I had a patient that was as young as my son and they were coming in with these injuries and the swelling was that severe and there was pulsing and there was all these signs of trauma, the first thing I would have done is called up DCFS. The first thing I would have done is called up the police. And I am just disgusted at how poorly this was handled. And I mean, clearly the police were called, because there is a report, but they just don't mention anything in regards to the specialist stating that she believed my child was sexually abused. She said she had concerns that he had been anally penetrated, which for a doctor to put that on paper, considering how terrified doctors are of being sued, she had to feel very strongly about that opinion.
Right.
Because they try to avoid that at all costs nowadays.
Yeah, they do, because they don't want to be, like you said, sued. I mean, like I told you in the beginning, my prayers, our prayers go out to you and your family, your daughter. I pray that this gets resolved properly. You get the justice that you deserve. James get the justice that he deserves. Your daughter get the justice that she deserves. Because I know it takes a lot. And I know it drains you not knowing and not getting things that you deserve to have. I'm very compassionate about it. I can't stand child predators. Right now, the blood in my body is boiling. I'm ready to come to Illinois and fight somebody, because I'm hurting for you and your family. Like, this is trauma to me. I'm ready to just help as much as I can to get justice for James, justice for your daughter, and justice for you.
Well, we definitely appreciate that. And it's so amazing to have people like you that are willing to fight for our children and stand up against these corrupt injustices. The NBC News team actually just did a segment regarding what is going on in custody courts right now, where the abusive parent is getting custody because they're claiming that the one that is saying the child is being abused is coaching or alienating said child. And this is interesting because statistically, it is a very, very low portion. I believe it's between 5 to 10% of allegations regarding any kind of abuse are falsified. So why are we going off of such a small statistic and ignoring the 90% that aren't false? Why are we putting children with abusers for such a small statistic?
Again.
And you know what makes me sick is no one cares about what happens to these kids. No one cares about the future drug addiction or the future incarceration or the future suicides. No one cares about that or thinks about that. They only see the now. I know the future of children like that. I've been a child in that situation. I've been an adult who's had to come to terms with everything that's happened to them. And I've had friends who are the same way, and they ended up in bad situations because of what they went through. And you know what?
Yeah.
Some of them don't make it out.
Yeah.
And my son was that example. He didn't make it out. What happened to him was, it was just too much. And he was just too young. And God saved my daughter.
Yes, he did. And she needs to understand that it's not her fault. So that way she doesn't have that in her head to mess with her, that she feels maybe, you know, like in the future she feel like it was her fault, and it's not. So, you know, a lot of things mm-hmm. take time for her, and it's going to take time for you, because it's not your fault either. You tried everything in your power to keep these disgusting people away from your children, and the system failed you. So
I did what I could, you
exactly.
know, financially, what I could legally, and I'm still doing what I could legally. I have so many people ask me every single day, why have you not just upped and left? Why have you not ran with your kid? Because that's not the way the court system works. If I leave with
nope.
my child, I am kidnapping my child. If I leave with my child, I go to jail. Then what happens to my child? She's with abusive
exactly.
pieces of garbage. There is no way I would ever risk that. There's no way I would ever risk, you know, I would do anything to even cause contempt. Like, that's not in my mind. That's not something I'm ever going to do, because my child doesn't deserve that. She doesn't need to be taken away from her mother anymore. She doesn't need to be in the hands of people who are not going to protect her.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's not right, and it's not going to happen. And these people who think that everything is just flowers and rainbows, and if you say someone's abusive, then they're abusive, and that's the fact, and then they're put in jail. Like, they're living in a fantasy world. I mean, 0.1% of domestic rapes are prosecuted and convicted. 0.1%. It's basically still legal to sexually assault your spouse or your partner. At this point, the statistics for sexual assault are maddening. The statistics for homicides that are actually prosecuted and confirmed are maddening, especially when it comes to children, because like I told you, they're so difficult to prove with kids, especially if it was suffocation. There was a woman who suffocated all six of her children, and she only got caught after the sixth child. Because they said, oh, well, they all can't just be SIDS. I mean, you would think they would have started thinking that after the second child. But I don't know if it's just lazy or incompetence or the lack of funds. I'm not really sure what it is. But when people are out there talking about protesting the police and everything else, I get it. Because why do we even have a police force if they're not doing their job, if they're not protecting our kids, if they're not willing to investigate something that there's definitely foul play in? I mean, the history alone with my family and the DCFS and the police cases and all of this stuff would tell you there's foul play. And you investigated this like it was a natural death. On a two-year-old that was found in an adult bedroom, foaming from his mouth with blood, foaming from his nose with blood. How the heck would you even think that's a natural death? And there was a wastebasket full of bloody tissues that they didn't even bother to test the DNA on. And this is all in the police report. I mean, anyone can FOIA this. Anyone can look it up. So, you know, I have no problem saying any of this on your radio show because it's all there. And it's sickening. Yeah, it's sickening. It makes me want to throw up. It makes just functioning every single day almost impossible. But I do it because I love my daughter. And I do it
right.
because she needs me. And that is why I do what I do. I mean, I'm still working two jobs. I'm still paying all the bills of my home, my car, you know, everything. I'm doing whatever I have to do and paying lawyer fees on top of that and trying to put together three protests because I love my daughter and I love my son. Right. And I will never stop loving them.
Right. I get it. Mother's love is different. We have 2 minutes left. I really do appreciate you coming on here and telling your story, James' story, and your daughter's story. I would love to have you back with any updates. You know, you're more than welcome to come here. The door is always open. So is there anything else you want to say before we sign off?
Just again, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be on your show. Thank you for letting me tell my story, James' story, my daughter's story. It's definitely a story that needs to be heard. And, you know, it's not just us. This is going on all over the world. You know, there are mothers being wrongfully accused every single day. And because of it, their children are winding up in the hands of very abusive individuals. And if it's not stopped, there will be more graves. There will be more dead bodies. And there will be more mothers and fathers without their children.
Once again, our prayers is with you. And keep your head up, remain strong, and keep fighting. Because this ain't over.
Nope, it's not. Justice for James.
Yes, justice for James.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and have a good night, and thank you for coming, and God bless you.
God bless.
All right, take care.
You too. Good night.
Good night. That was the best episode, one of the best episodes, I should say. I appreciate Kara coming on. I really learned a lot. And I really do want to say that another episode that touched my heart. And I really do appreciate her coming on and wanting to tell her story. So with that being said, until the next time, everyone, God bless. Stay up. Peace out.